what does the audience know already? What is their background? What are they here to learn? That's sort of how I cater and change the narrative according to. They get what they want to hear from us. At the same time, we are able to deliver in a way that they can best benefit from it.
In terms of the direction that you see AI going, based on the announcements and the breakthroughs and things along those lines, do you see any other like bigger trends that are coming?
Last year was more about just large language models, but this year I'm seeing that it's being included at the intersection of different fields as well. Like we're seeing large language models and robotics. We have seen innovation there with OpenAI's recent announcement. I'm definitely going to say that we'll see wider applications in ways that companies will be able to have more things that can help them out in different areas of their work.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Ken's Nearest Neighbors, the podcast where I bring in fascinating people from my world, talk about life, data science, sports analytics, content creation, and much, much more. I'm your host, Ken G. If you haven't already, we'd greatly appreciate it if you gave us a rating and followed the show. It helps us to continue to bring in incredible guests. Ruchi, welcome back to the Ken's Nearest Neighbors podcast. The last episode we did, it's almost a year ago, was one of the most popular episodes on the channel. So I'm really excited to have you back and to talk a little bit about how some things have changed for you, especially going into a new role, and a little bit about also GTC, where we're at now, and your experience there. So again, welcome. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much for having me on your channel again. It was an awesome experience last time, and I'm sure this is going to be great. I'm doing good otherwise, and GTC has been super busy. We've seen so many new things being announced at the keynote, as well as every company here seems to be doing something in the generative AI space, which is really exciting given that the hype is there, but at the same time, companies are getting something useful out of it, and they are able to leverage it in ways that people cannot normally think of.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I agree 100%. There's so much going on here. Some of it is unbelievably interesting and innovative. Some of it, when you read the signs, you're just like, I have no clue what that means. Like enterprise, XYZ, this and that. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, I'm sure there's utility, but there's also this massive confusion that comes with a new technology and people trying to innovate with it, but also capitalize with it, right?
Right.
You were telling me you moved into a new role at HP after you graduated from Carnegie Mellon. And I'm interested in what that experience has been like. From what I understand, you're more on the product side than the pure engineering side you were on before. And you're probably dealing in those murkier waters where, you know, you see all these fancy words and it can be a little bit complex. I was wondering if you could sort of break down that transition for you and why you chose to go into a bit more product than more pure engineering.
So most people know about my data science ambassador position at HP, and that's sort of how I started off. And that's how we met as well. Yeah. We started off with, I guess, if I'm not wrong, 16 ambassadors in the very first cohort. And at that time, we had access to these workstations. We were doing projects. And we used to talk about it on social media and how it's benefiting us in the ways that we work in terms of data science projects, be it Kaggle, be it otherwise, anything. And that's sort of when I realized that I have a knack for communicating tech the way that I do, and in a digestible way that people can grasp and understand things from it. So that's sort of where my interest in marketing sparked. And I knew that I was definitely not wanting to leave my data science roots behind or my tech roots behind, which is why I opted for a position like the product marketing manager role I have at HP. It's specific to data science and AI. So sometimes I still occasionally code at work, but at the same time, I'm getting to do product marketing, which is a different field. And the transition was easy for me to pivot because it was something I had done before. At the same time, I'm learning something new on the job, and it's been a great experience.
Amazing. What was maybe were there any stumbles on the way in terms of other people understanding the tech side? Because something I've seen in a lot of companies is when you're coming in, mm-hmm. into product with an engineering background, yeah. a lot of the times you come and you're probably a little bit more on the engineer side of things. And it's a little bit hard to translate a lot of that information to people more purely on the marketing and sales side. Right. were you looked at like a resource of, oh, explain this to me? And how do you help assimilate all of that knowledge? Because to me, that's one of the biggest barriers. I think dramatically more people should be going into product from engineering than just from a marketing background. Right. Obviously, there's benefits for both. I think a great team in that space would have engineers as well as people from marketing. But, you know, what re-education do you have to do? And how do you have to educate others that are maybe that you're working with?
Right. That's a great question, because that's something I faced along my journey as well. So initially, when I had started off as an ambassador and I would make all these social media posts, it would be very, very tech focused, tech heavy. I'm communicating specs. And yes, people want to see that, but they also want to see how that can be useful for them. So being able to break that down into a simple way that they can understand that, okay, this is the GPU. These are the specs. This is how much it can push. This is how much the project that I'm doing can be scaled to a much higher level because of the needs, because of the requirements and specifications and the requirements of the project. So, I used to communicate in a very tech focused way, and now that I transitioned to being someone in marketing, and the way that I communicate now is, yes, still tech heavy, but in a way that people can understand it better.
I ended up working in product for a little while, and I found it a little bit frustrating when there were specific technical requirements that were needed for a project.
Yeah.
But the important nuance of that was a little bit lost on people making decisions. Mm-hmm. I don't think or believe that that's necessarily the case at DBHP where you're working. Yeah. But how do you prevent some of that lost in translation aspect where some of the quote unquote non-sexy features mm-hmm. might be really integral in something working,
yeah.
whereas the things that are quote unquote sellable mm-hmm. are not necessarily even relevant to the overall yeah. tech stack?
So the way that I do is, again, by focusing on a use case and making sure that the story that I'm telling is something that the other person can understand. And now we have a lot of events at HP. We've been doing a lot of trade shows and conferences. We had 3 this month. And the audience for each of these events was different. So one question that I always ask is, what does the audience know already? What is their background? What are they here to learn? And that's sort of how I cater and change the narrative according to. So that they get what they want to hear from us. At the same time, we are able to deliver in a way that they can best benefit from it.
Amazing. And where do you attribute learning some of these skills to? You know, obviously we talk a lot about Kaggle. I mean, you're the youngest 3-time Kaggle Grandmaster. But, and I would imagine there are some skills, especially in creating notebooks where you're doing storytelling. Yeah. Are there other areas perhaps where you learn in school, or is it just on the job where you're picking up the ability to essentially empathize and communicate tech in an effective way?
So I would attribute it to some of my learnings at Carnegie Mellon and my master's program, which helped me communicate in a way that's understood by a wider audience, because I transitioned from being a computer engineer to an information systems management grad at CMU. And many of the assignments and projects and presentations that we had required us to be able to translate those insights in a way that customers or stakeholders can understand what you're saying. Because not always at the other end of the table will we have someone who is who has a tech background, and they still have a technical problem that they want us to solve, but we need to be able to explain things in a way that, again, they can ensure that, yes, this is what I wanted, this is the thing that I was looking for, but at the same time that they know that, you know, everything's going well and we don't throw a lot of jargon at them.
That's good. Jargon is definitely stressful. I mean, I'm going around walking the floor at NVIDIA GTC.
Yeah.
And there's just like a lot of words that I don't know, which I think is funny. I mean, I'm fairly immersed in the space at this point in time, but the new jargon associated with the domain is very interesting. So in one way, it shows that, oh, we're really immersed, we know a lot about this, and yeah. we use this jargon because we're so familiar. But in another way, it makes it a little bit inaccessible to people who are trying to learn. And I find that dichotomy really interesting, as the yeah. people who are buying these technology solutions necessarily well enough versed in this that the jargon is going to be relevant. Mm-hmm. I actually don't know if that's the case. And it seems that that is a very fine-tuned thing that marketers have to deal with, or especially product marketers have to deal with. Definitely. What are some of the things you've seen this week at GTC that were exciting to you or were relatively like different or surprising to you?
So I was very impressed with the keynote that Jensen delivered on Monday and things that he mentioned with respect to the hype cycle and also how we have like the compute that's possible to be pushed every 10 years and the way that NVIDIA was leading. So I found that really interesting, the way that NVIDIA is pushing boundaries in the GPU space.
Interesting. Are there any like ancillary things that you thought were inherently practical or useful to the projects that you're working on, whether it's products related to hardware, whether it's related to platform or software? Were there any things that you're like, oh, I could use that in my own personal stuff or even at a company-wide level?
So, and again, another thing that was there was the pandas on the GPU acceleration that they announced at. I think they announced it a little early, but I got to check it out at GTC. So it's finally possible to have all of those things that we used to do and bank on the CPU for now on the GPU. And it was long awaited, and many people who were waiting for this are now finally going to be able to use it.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I interviewed Wes McKinney, the creator of Pandas, I guess 2-3 weeks ago now. Oh, it'll be coming out right before yours. So it's cool to see how the transition of, you know, building this infrastructure, open source community, and now evolution and innovation in a specific space can go. And we sort of get a, not necessarily direct timeline, but we get to see the whole story play out as we kind of reach a precipice at this event. In terms of the direction that you see AI going, the direction that you see all of this essentially angling towards, are there any big trends that you find particularly interesting about AI now? Like before, we were talking about using ChatGPT as a student. We were talking about how prompting is probably going to become dramatically more relevant for engineers. Based on the announcements and the breakthroughs and things along those lines, do you see any other like bigger trends that are coming, or is that a similar vein we're looking at?
So I would say that last year was more about just large language models, but this year I'm seeing that it's being included at the intersection of different fields as well. Like we're seeing large language models and robotics. We have seen innovation there with OpenAI's recent announcement. And even these large language vision models that are now being implemented more than ever, I feel like it's only going to, the use cases are going to be much more as we progress and move towards the next few years to come. And I'm definitely going to say that we'll see wider applications in ways that companies will be able to have more things that can help them out in different areas of their work.
This episode of Ken's Nearest Neighbors is brought to you by Z by HP, HP's high compute workstation grade lidar products and solutions. Z is specifically made for high-performance data science solutions, and I personally use the ZBook Studio and the Z8 workstation. I really love that the Z workstations can come standard with Linux or WSL2, and they can be configured with the Data Science Software Stack Manager. With the Software Stack Manager, you can get right to the work of doing data science on day one without the overhead of having to completely reconfigure your new machine. Now back to our show. Yeah, well, it seemed to me in that same light that there's a lot of focus on robotics, which I wasn't necessarily expecting, but it seems very natural that we're not quite reaching the limits what we can do with software, but robotics and these types of things require dramatically more sensors and inputs that we haven't necessarily been evaluating. For example, we have audio, we have visual data, but the sense of touch data or the spatial or proprioceptual data is not necessarily there yet. And so robotics are important for moving things in physical space, but you need additional data and additional information that hasn't necessarily been as widely available to start evaluating and expanding on that. And so I thought it was really cool to see the investment and the interest in going essentially like more modal.
Yeah.
I mean, we have multimodal already, but that's generally like text, video, audio, robotics. You have physical space, you have sense of touch, you have gravity, you have a lot of these types of things that make it more complicated. Yeah. But you also have new tools, like they were talking about, I believe, digital twins, mm-hmm. and a lot more simulation and, yeah. And world building, which allows us to model those things effectively.
Right.
And to me, that was very, very mind-blowing.
Yeah. I was really interested about looking into the Amazon use case that Jensen highlighted and how those simulations help to monitor things in warehouses. That seems to me as a very effective use case of using robots effectively.
Yeah, well, the thing about robotics, the thing about the advancements in AI, I was talking to Tina last week about this,
yeah.
is that it broadens the category of innovation into mm-hmm. just technology. It's not just machine learning anymore. It's yeah. not just data science. It's not any of these things. It's this whole new category that incorporates a tremendous amount outside of just the mm-hmm. traditional approaches we've looked at. So something I saw in a lot of the demo, a lot of the keynote, is that they're using a lot of simulation.
Yes.
And to me, that's not a data science technique. That is a mathematical technique, mm-hmm. but it's not traditionally thought of as a predictive model.
Correct.
But they're using it in a unique way with generative AI, with being able to move around parameters or whatever, to create a really unique probability distribution for things to happen. And I think that that's generally the future of all of this, is that we're not just looking within this really linear domain of machine learning, deep learning to create a more generalized intelligence. Yeah. We're able now to go to all of the field of mathematics and physics. And all of these different domains, which is exciting, but also it makes the feature space infinitely more complex.
Yeah, that's there. Like, so many people have to collaborate just to make that one product. And I can imagine the amount of resources in terms of time, money, and everything going into that. But it's really cool to see that people are coming together to make cooler products like this.
Yeah. I mean, something related to that too is that I got to see the excitement of all mm-hmm. of the people around this. I mean, we saw Jensen.
Yeah.
He was walking the floor yesterday, and he was just mobbed with people. And to me, that is the craziest thing, that a tech CEO is getting, you know, mobbed like a professional athlete or the president or something along these types of things. But it's also cool to see that not necessarily a singular person, but like the vision of a person or a couple people can make such a tremendous impact on an industry, whatever it might be. I think it's still up for debate in the long term. Like, obviously, there's a lot of benefits in the short term, but, you know, we'll see where this all leads. But it is inspiring to be around someone like that and see it. I mean, we saw how much, for example, as Steve Jobs changed the world.
Yeah.
You know, I would hope that something like this would also inspire other people to innovate or be entrepreneurs or to be able to build really big, impressive things and dream incredibly large.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there are so many people now who want to jump onto the generative AI space and do cool things, which I feel like 3-4 years ago, they wouldn't have probably even thought about it. So it's really exciting that way, that people are coming up again with use cases that they probably wouldn't have thought about. And it's expanding the way that we think, the way that we work, the way we collaborate, all of those things.
Yeah, I love that idea that more people are interested in it. Yeah. I also think the barrier to entry is lower mm-hmm. because we have largely AI that makes things, it makes it easier to code, makes it easier to do these things. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a really interesting phenomenon, because that means that more people who are creative, more people that view the world differently, but might not be as necessarily technical,
yeah.
can start working with these things and start creating and developing. And I think that's where a huge linchpin for innovation lies, mm-hmm. is not necessarily in the scientific researchers digging into it, but the hackers or the people who are even artists. Like, I was talking with Matt Wolf. Hopefully I'll have him on the podcast at some point. But he's coming this from a graphic design background mm-hmm. and really looking at the innovation that AI is having there. And now he's learned so much about it that he's talking more broadly about the AI advancements. Yeah. And people with those types of minds, people who are coming from different fields and now have access to these tools, are probably going to bring that next wave of innovation, because they're not necessarily narrowly defined by their understanding of just the AI systems.
Yeah.
They're defined by these broader fields that have different types of crossover than we ever would have thought before.
Yeah. I was even thinking about this in terms of Sora, where we have the text to video now, and it's really going to reduce the barrier to entry again for people who don't have the resources to create movies and all these producers. So it's going to reduce the production costs and things like that. But at the same time, I know it's being red-teamed right now, and they need to make sure they put the right restrictions in place so it's not misused to a degree that we don't want it to.
Yeah, so you're telling me I shouldn't have spent all this money on fancy cameras and stuff. I get it. So you're also doing a lot more content creation. Obviously, you have a huge following on Kaggle. You have a huge following on Twitter as well, but you're probably not using that platform as much. You know, what is your vision? What is your goal of putting yourself out there more and telling more stories?
So right now, my primary focus is LinkedIn and Instagram, which I started out not too long ago. And my goal is to help out people, mostly in their early careers, to be able to figure out what they exactly want to do in terms of pursuing the degree that they want, the kind of job that they want, and the way that they should be able to achieve that. So I'm currently sharing tips and tricks that helped me get to the position that I am at today, and more about personal branding, because I feel like most people do apply for jobs, and in the current job market, it's pretty rough for most people. And even if they have like stellar profiles, it's pretty difficult given how things are today. And personal branding can really come in handy in a way that you tell your story in a more effective way so that people know you before they get to knowing you. So if your brand precedes you, things can be much simpler. And again, at the same time, things like networking, going to events, speaking to people, it's something that I'm encouraging through my posts in the form of reels and like even text media posts and all those things.
Yeah, I really liked what you're saying there about the conferences and meeting people.
Yeah.
That to me has had a massive disproportionately positive effect on my personal overall career, but I've also seen it in other people's career. I've had multiple people on the podcast who've, through meeting people at tech meetups, free tech meetups like Python meetups and, you know, Chicago ML or any of these types of things, they've landed internships and jobs. There's also something different about meeting people in person. And admittedly, not everyone has incredible interpersonal skills, but being able to connect with people and explain what you're working on or thinking about, to me, has opened so many doors that would not have been available before. Yeah. I mean, I've made it pretty publicly known that I just recently moved from Hawaii to Austin. And I've already found in Austin that me being there in person, talking to people, has already facilitated tons of relationships, tons of opportunities that if I'd reached out, even with the fairly large presence I have on social platforms, I wasn't getting emails, messages back. And if you're seeing someone in front of them, one, they can't really ignore you, but also you have a dramatically different and completely like more sensory.
You pay more attention to things as well. Like if I get a LinkedIn message versus somebody comes and speaks to me at the booth at GTC or any other event that I go to, I tend to remember those conversations more rather than a text that I had sent maybe even yesterday. So it's definitely much more impactful, more memorable, and you get to communicate in a better way. Like it's through text, I feel like it's a little more limiting. Video chats a little better when you want to explain your point, you can share your screen and all of those things to walk people through your projects. But again, when it's in person, it's much different. Like I would say the experience is entirely different.
Well, we talk about AI models, right? Where you have, this is additional multimodal interaction.
Yeah.
And you can collect and get so much more information from having an in-person conversation. I've been trying to do dramatically more in-person podcasts because I feel like they go into more interesting and more unique places.
Yeah.
Just because you can sort of play off of what the other person is experiencing better. Yeah. And for some reason, I think magically, I just work better in person. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're on video, you're still looking through your screen.
Yeah.
You're still maybe distracted by your email, or maybe you have notes or something along those lines.
Yeah, it's very 1D.
Yeah. And the natural aspect of conversations sort of run away. It's a little bit, I mean, it's just too structured for me.
Yeah.
I think that there's something very magical about the slightly inspirational nature of conversation, especially in these in-person settings.
Yeah, it feels much more real that way. I completely work remotely right now, but I definitely enjoy meeting up with my teammates when I go to these conferences. So that's also another factor for me that I finally get to meet the people that I work with, and we have these conversations, and I take those back, and I feel happier working when I go back home because I know the people that I'm working with a little better. But at the same time, I would say like 100% remote work has also been easier because at the same time, I can transition easily from my, once I'm done with my work, I can move towards my content creation. Like I don't have to commute between places and yeah.
I personally think that there's more of a benefit to remote work where you can meet diverse people.
Yeah.
Rather than necessarily office work where you're seeing the same people every day, mm-hmm. you get way more surface area for opportunities, for unique trains of thought, for different types of conversations when you're at events similar to this. And there's nothing wrong with in-person or remote work. I think both can be effective, assuming that you're not necessarily being forced to work in office. I don't know if that, depending on the industry, maybe that's, it makes more sense. But I find that the access to randomness that you get mm-hmm. and like the positive form of randomness in these sorts of conventions, conversations is really powerful. I also feel like being or convincing yourself to be a little bit sociable,
yeah.
you know, also is a big factor because if you go and you don't meet anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not going to work in that case.
But I also think on a broader level, people don't realize how open others are to conversing or getting to know other people. And that to me is a really exciting concept is that if people are at a conference and you talk to them, I've had zero experiences where they weren't friendly. And of course, there's going to be rare random circumstances of that. Mm-hmm. But most people are here to meet other people or further their career or learn about things. If you have something that you could help educate people on, it'll be very popular in these places.
Yeah, it's very hard to ignore someone when they come and speak to you. So again, like if this is over LinkedIn or any other social media platform, you may think that, oh, I can respond to this later. And then you may forget about it and you may not come back to it. But in person, if you're meeting maybe say a mentor or somebody who you really look up to, you can actually have a chance at that conversation than you would have at social media.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've also explained to me, you've talked with quite a few people or been on panels with people who you generally look up to, right?
Yes.
And that's essentially only been enabled through going to these things, mm-hmm. but also putting yourself out there in terms of speaking and things along those lines. Mm-hmm. How has that sort of evolved for you? I mean, who have you met that's really inspired you? And how has that shaped your career or your performance on Kaggle or your concept of also creating content?
So I think one of the first few panels I was on, I got to meet Abhishek Thakur and I really look up to his work. So it was really exciting to share the stage with him. It was a virtual panel at the time. I haven't gotten to meet him in person yet. But it really helped me understand that, you know, people at that level can also be really humble and down-to-earth and friendly. So I used to think that, okay, maybe once people achieve a lot, they probably won't be as friendly to people who come up to them and speak to them. But it was really nice to see that he is really a nice person to talk to. And sometimes we talk on Twitter as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, Abhishek has been on the podcast and I've really enjoyed speaking with him as well. I think that it's really interesting if we look at people who maybe have higher profile in person versus higher profile online. If you think about even my inbox or your inbox, get a lot of messages and
It can be overwhelming.
I probably have over 10,000 messages in my LinkedIn inbox, for example, right? And so the amount of time for me to sift through that and decide what I should be looking at or who I should be responding to is infinitesimally small compared to if I'm in person. In theory, we can only, you have to dedicate at least 15 seconds, 20 seconds to talk to someone.
Yeah.
And that's a lot more time to be able to hook someone and pull them into a positive conversation for both people. And I think a lot about in terms of content or in terms of interactions, where I have the largest pull or the largest opportunity to communicate with someone. And by far, in person is the best way to get someone who is high profile to get in front of them or have a conversation with them. Yeah. I mean, but you look even at this conference. I mean, I went with a lot of the content creators, the NVIDIA content creators, and those people, many of whom have dramatically larger followings than I do. The majority of the time they're out there, they're not mobbed by people.
Yeah.
They're perfectly accessible to be communicated with, talked with. And if those are the types of people you want to talk with, like you can probably find them.
Yeah.
You know, to me that is astounding. You can't find them on LinkedIn because they have so much traffic, but it's not like their entire day is occupied at a conference. It's very, very accessible in comparison. There's multiple people only two people that they came up to me this time, but I had awesome conversations with them.
Yeah.
And they're really interesting. And so to me, you know, obviously GTC, there's some price barrier, but there's also free tickets that are offered. There's these types of things.
Mm-hmm. I think for students, some schools offer like scholarships or all of those things.
Exactly.
For events like that. And one thing that I particularly liked about GTC was I posted about it on LinkedIn and a couple of people managed to find me through there. They were like, oh, okay, you're there at GTC. We would like to meet up with you. And they managed to set aside some time and I did end up meeting them. It was pretty good that they were able to find out that I was there at the same time and be proactive enough to reach out. And it was nice to see some of these people in person.
Yeah, exactly the same thing happened to me. I said, hey, I'll be here. Like, come say hi. I'll be at the Ziba HP desk. And
yeah,
multiple people came. Oh, two people again. came by and said hi. And we had some amazing conversations. So we obviously talked about your transition into more of the product side. We talked about the experience at GTC. Talked about your expansion in the content space. Where can people learn more about the content, your story, and things along those lines?
So I would say LinkedIn, definitely, because I'm very active there. But I'm more active on Instagram, on my channel, which is Tech by Ruchi. So I think that would be the place that people can also reach out to me for any questions that they have. And I typically try to respond as fast as I can.
Amazing. Well, I will link both of those in the description as well as the show notes. Any final thoughts, words, anything to add?
Yeah, like if you're not following Ken already, this is your sign.
Yep. Amazing. Ruchi, thank you so much for the time. This was amazing. We're working together a little bit more this week, but I'm really looking forward to it and hope to do this again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the podcast. No problem. It was really exciting.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Ken's Nearest Neighbors. Many of you have been asking about how you can support the show, and we're extremely grateful for all the engagement so far. The best way that you can show your support is to subscribe to both the Ken's Nearest Neighbors and the Ken's Nearest Neighbors Clips YouTube channels. If you're listening to us on Spotify or Apple Music, giving us a rating and sharing any of the episodes with someone that you believe might find the content useful is also greatly appreciated. The Ken's Nearest Neighbors podcast is hosted by me, Ken G, produced by Bobby Hicks, and is edited by Mario Paul and Tony Pelleriti.